slippers on shoes.
What's the matter, Morty?
Girl, this thing.
Can't you buy our whole dress?
Girl, this thing.
Great gowns.
Girl,
beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
Girl,
no, it hasn't.
Hi, my name is Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
Welcome to another Sex and the City episode rewatch. We are doing the Post-it episode. We are doing the Post-it always sticks twice.
Iconic app.
I mean, we're all Sex and the City fanatics, but I feel like we should actually start this episode with a bit of a recap of the previous episode, because so much of what happens in the last minutes impact this episode.
But we need a bit of a refresher. Like, I've completely forgot that this is when the girls found out about Charlotte's engagement. Like, that gets very much overshadowed by everything else that's happening.
That's true. So in the last moments of the previous episode, Berger breaks up with Carrie on a Post-it note, although just 12 hours earlier said he wanted to make things work with her. And then Charlotte reunites with Harry at a singles event at the synagogue, and he proposes to her. This is an episode I was convinced we had already done, but it's just because we've created so many memes, merch, and posts that I, like, Mandela affected myself that we had done this already.
Never talked about it. And truly, a really great opening scene and voiceover. Carrie says that New York City is a great place to be engaged. And we see Charlotte hailing a cab with her giant rock. But it's an even better place to be enraged. And we see Carrie, like, angry Carrie, just screaming at strangers on the street.
This is more a true Carrie, right? If she had been through the experiences she's been through, lived in New York as long as she lived, she'd be yelling at more strangers, I think.
Yeah, I think that angry Carrie might actually be my favorite Carrie.
Yeah, when she was yelling at the man, "You're so busy, you're so busy," it reminded me of when she throws the McDonald's in Big's apartment.
Mm-hmm. It's a really great vibe for her. Also, she's wearing, like, this sheer tunic
and oversized shorts, which
kind of an amazing look. Like, weird, but holds up, I think.
Carrying a pair of men's cargo shorts always made an impact on me, and it's a silhouette I love of, like, a very delicate top. It's a sort of, like, thoughty Kevin Smith look, I like to think.
Also very, like, Nicolas Ghesquiere, Balenciaga vibes.
So Carrie's on her way to the diner to meet the girls for brunch. This episode is directed by Alan Taylor, who I just want to say went on to direct Game of Thrones, Thor the Dark World, and Terminator Genesis.
Random.
Odd. So Charlotte announces that she's engaged. She shows off her ring. Harry based it on the ring that Richard Burton gave Elizabeth Taylor.
Obviously, the girls are thrilled for her, as she has been a sad sack of shit. And Carrie also has news, which is, of course, that Berger broke up with her on a Post-it note.
Samantha has great lines that sort of set up the rest of the episode, right? Because when Charlotte shows off her engagement ring, she goes, "Oh, it's even more fabulous than your first ring." Her comment about Carrie's breakup is, "The motherfucker is concise." Chelsea, do you remember that when we interviewed Michael Patrick King for the 20th anniversary of Sex and the City, we did ask him where the idea for breaking up with someone on a Post-it came from, because a lot of the storylines for Sex and the City come from the writers' own lives. And then in that moment, Michael Patrick King realized that it was actually based on a way that he had been broken up with, and he had forgotten until that moment we asked him.
Poor guy. I don't think it was an actual Post-it, though. But the Post-it of it all definitely heightened the comedy, certainly. Miranda reveals that she was once broken up with by someone's doorman.
I know. It's so funny to watch this episode in this digital age of dating where ghosting and a breakup text is the norm. Because I'm like, is breaking up on a Post-it that bad? Like, do you have a worse breakup, Chell?
No, I feel like I'm someone that's rarely had, like, short-term relationships. Like, I've never, like, dated someone seriously for like 5 months and then broken it off.
Because I was like, have I had a breakup or a breakup akin to a Post-it note? And I realized that my first adult boyfriend that I was seeing in college, we were on the phone when I was in LA and he was back in New York. And I don't remember the context of the call, but I remember it being very flirtatious. And I was like, should I get some lingerie for you so I can show it off back in New York? I swear it was probably less awkward, or maybe not. But there was a long pause and he just said, "Yeah, I don't think I want to do this anymore."
Oh my God. That's worse than this.
No, Chelsea. You know what's worse? is the fact that we lived in the same building. So when I got back on a plane to go to New York, I had to see him as we lived in the same apartment building.
You shat where you eat.
That was absolutely on me.
Like, that was a terrible judgment call. Not to blame you for this, but like, that's what happens when you start fucking your neighbors.
And to be fair, I was 20, but I do feel like I won this situation because he decided to quit his tech job shortly after we broke up, start a startup that bankrupted him, and then he had to move out of the building. So
beautiful.
So yeah, Miranda was broken up with by a doorman, which prompts Samantha to say, "I missed having a doorman," which is very clear that Samantha has used a doorman to break up with someone, which honestly is a scene I would have loved to see somewhere in Sex and the City's run.
Truly.
Carrie states that she's going to be the bigger person and she's not going to engage. She's not even going to leave him an angry message saying, "Hi, it's me, you're a dick." This gets back to a grittier Carrie that I don't think we've seen since season 2. Again, it makes me think of her calling Big drunk and yelling at him. This is a Carrie I'd really love to see more. I think Petrovsky could have gotten a little more of this Carrie.
Mm-hmm, for sure. The girls are processing Carrie's post-it situation. And Charlotte says, "You know what, Carrie? Everything happens for a reason, even if you don't know what it is yet." And Miranda, of course, immediately disagrees with her. And I'm inclined to agree with Miranda.
Yes. People who say that everything happens for a reason are people whose lives have worked out in a way. Like, as they note, Charlotte is saying this because she realizes, oh, my relationship with Trey wasn't a waste because I got divorced, and because I got divorced, I met my divorce attorney. I think that this is our Roman Empire, Chelsea, because looking back at all of the And Just Like That and Sex and the City rewatches, like, it really does not get brought up enough that this woman married her divorce attorney.
No, I know. It is really crazy. I do think that, like, sometimes things happen because of, like, a combination of, like, manifestation, preparation, and luck. But, like, to think that everything happens for a reason sort of fails to consider, like, all of the really fucked up shit that happens all the time for absolutely no reason.
The burger relationship, as Carrie says, is a complete waste of time for Carrie, but also as an audience watching this show, because they did bring him in to kill him. Like, he was never meant to be a good boyfriend. He was not meant to be a long-term boyfriend. So it's like, why even invest the time? I would have much rather had Carrie in the early part of season 6 going on dates like it's season 3. Like, I would have much rather boyfriends of the week.
I don't know. I like the kind of psych out of, is this the one? Is this the one? How long did she actually date Burger for?
Oh my God, Chelsea, I would love to have this conversation, because while watching this episode, I'm like, is this behavior even warranted? Because how long could they have dated? 6 months?
I think that's merited after dating someone for 6 months. They break up with you on a post-it. You're at the very least spending Friday and Saturday night with them.
It's hard to tell in Sex and the City's perpetual spring summer how long this relationship has occurred. I'm hoping 6 months, given Carrie's reaction.
I don't know. I think that even if you date someone for a few months, that's a very fucked up way to break up with someone.
It is also the 1-2 punch of, they were on a break. They were on a Ross and Rachel break in the previous episode. And Carrie was reconciling, like, maybe this is not going to work out.
Right.
And he comes to her house with goddamn carnations and is like, I actually want to make this work. And then fucks her once more and is like, actually, ooh, bad decision. Gotta get out of here.
The fucking and the carnations are almost worse than the post-it of it all.
Brutal. There's some very daddy MPK pun about paper covers rock, I believe, because Charlotte showing her ring as evidence that everything happens for a reason, and then she just puts the post-it on the ring.
Okay, but that's a very well-crafted joke.
It is. Even in her anger and sadness, Carrie is there with the humor.
Carrie and Samantha are doing a walk and talk, and Samantha is wearing the most insane Pucci hat, the most insane outfit in general, and truly an outfit that doesn't make sense anywhere but South Beach.
Yeah, and they didn't even have the decency in And Just Like That to put Samantha in South Beach where she belongs. She's in London?
Yeah, truly not her climate. You're telling me she's wearing shit like that in London? Like, it was crazy enough in New York.
Carrie always giving Samantha a backhanded compliment. She's like, you know what? I should just be like you, Samantha. Keep it light. If you're never someone's girlfriend, you can never be someone's ex-girlfriend, which is kind of a compliment.
That's Samantha's core logic.
That's true. And I realized in rewatching this that this might have become my dating philosophy, partially inspired by this episode and partially inspired by how my first adult boyfriend broke up with me, perhaps.
Yes, seriously. That's so traumatic.
So Carrie insists that this cannot be the day that she gets broken up with on a post-it, and she wants to go out with the girls, which Samantha takes out her old-timey planner, which I think Samantha only has an old-timey planner for the joke that when she opens the planner, it's filled with post-its, and Carrie goes, oh, look how many men have broken up with you and you're fine. Not the best joke. Honestly, it wasn't until this rewatch that I understood what that joke was supposed to mean.
Carrie's like, I need to go out and do something fabulous to, like, distract from the fact that this happened to me today. Samantha's like, oh, come to the opening of bed.
I'm gonna take you girls to bed.
And guys, this actually was a real club in New York called Bed, although it didn't open until after they filmed this episode.
Crazy.
There was one in Miami, apparently, that, like, was expanding to New York, and, like, the Sex and the City writers knew about it, assumed that it would be open by the time they were filming this, but it wasn't, so I guess they had to create a fake Bed, but there was actually a club called Bed, and what's even campier is that a mere 6 blocks away, there was another club called Duvet, that was also a bed-themed nightclub.
Summer is fast approaching, which means more social events, more weddings to attend, or in my case, throw, more nights out on the town, and hopefully, more vacations. That's why I'm so thankful for today's sponsor, Honeylove, for covering us with the best shapewear. You've heard me swear up and down about their Superpower Short. I can't live without it now. See, the Superpower Short Smooth shapes and lifts, giving you a flawless silhouette under any outfit. Might I be wearing this underneath my own wedding dress? I think so. It has targeted compression technology that distinguishes between areas where you want more support and areas that you need less compression. And their Signature X targets and sculpts your midsection without squeezing your natural curves. It's designed to work with your body, not against it. Imagine that. With Honeylove, you can feel your best even when you're wearing less. They've revolutionized compression technology, so you no longer have to feel like you're suffocating while wearing effective shapewear. Honeylove shapewear features lingerie-inspired design details that you'll want to show off and is made with breathable fabric that keeps you nice and cool, which is perfect for hot days. For a limited time, only you, dear fuckette, can get Honeylove on sale. Get 20% off your entire order with our exclusive link, honeylove.com/outfit. Support our show and check them out at honeylove.com/outfit. I was gonna say that I miss the fake Sex and the City themed bars, but this evidently was a real club.
The SM themed bar was never in New York, but it's like they have those in Japan. I feel like they just copy restaurants from like other nations.
Right, and assume that it would be in New York City.
Yeah, I think Bed also had its origins in Europe.
So now we get Carrie's I Couldn't Help But Wonder.
People say everything happens for a reason. These people are usually women. And these women are usually sorting through a breakup. It seems that men can get out of a relationship without even a goodbye. But apparently women have to either get married or learn something. Why are we in such a rush to move from confused to Confucius? Do we search for lessons to lessen the pain?
Yeah, of course we search for lessons to lessen the pain. I feel like that's a survival instinct that's ingrained in us because we're like, wait, what can I do so that I never feel like this again?
To make every experience we have meaning is not always possible, even if it's something like being with someone for months.
With lessons from relationships, it's like you can't really receive them in the moment. Like, it's more something that you figure out in hindsight.
Something that I've noticed about male-female dynamics is that it's this bizarre thing where in the immediate, I understand I'm generalizing, but like in the immediate, especially if you're ghosted by a guy or abruptly broken up with, you do all of this processing. And usually it's like 3 months later that that guy gets back in touch and is like, I'd love to just have some closure and really explain why I broke up with you on a post. And by then you've already moved on. You actually don't need the explanation anymore.
That all sounds like wild to me. They come back after they ghost?
They usually do. It's usually a 3 month time period. I don't know why it's 3 months, but it is.
That's bizarre. Meanwhile, at Samantha's, we get a great scene with her and Smith Jared. And this is a peak Smith Jared episode, I will say.
I was not expecting that from this episode, because you are correct. It is so aligned with the post of it all that I forget that anything else happens in this.
So Smith is going to be on TRL, which is so perfect.
Because he is the absolute hunk. And I guess in 2003, 2004, the absolute hunk got time on TRL. It's the power of that billboard.
Yeah, I feel like back in that time, there were some male models that were kind of household names. Like, I feel like Tyson Beckford would be on TRL.
For sure.
And that wouldn't be weird. But basically, Samantha has called a bunch of designers to ask them to dress Smith Jared, and they've all said yes. Gucci, YSL, and Dolce all want him.
And yet, he just wants to wear his tank top, baby. That's just who he is.
I love that so much.
He tells her how cool it is that his girlfriend is helping him. To which Samantha does not like that label at all, and advises him in her role as publicist that if he's asked, he should say that he's still looking, but he hasn't found anyone special yet.
Are people still doing this?
It's so weird to enact sort of beard behavior when you're a straight man, though.
Yeah.
That's usually the line of closeted actors.
No, but I do think it used to be a thing where the young heartthrobs had to seem to be available. Why? So, like, the delusional readers of Bop magazine and Tiger Beat can, like, make their little shrines in peace?
I don't know where it's at these days, but it used to be Tumblr, right? Like, when people learned that Benedict Cumberbatch was getting married, like, still to this day, people have concocted elaborate scenarios of how his wife is actually, this is a showmance. And even though they're married and have been married for, like, 7 or 10 years and have 3 kids, it's actually just all for show. It's the same people who think that Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson are still married and have children.
Right, right. So Samantha bullies him into wearing Dior sunglasses at the very least, because if you're not wearing something the kids can't afford, how will they know to look up to you? Which is a genius line.
I know, I need more of these Samantha-isms.
Yeah.
I need Samantha's art of the deal. So we have a brief moment with Charlotte, who is admiring her closet through the lens of her new engagement ring. Because everything goes with her new engagement ring except, ooh, her old wedding dress, which is still sitting in her closet.
Yeah, that doesn't spark joy.
And also, Charlotte seems to be the type of woman that would get it, like, archival and boxed up right after getting married.
Although, was that as big of a thing, like, 20 years ago?
My mom did. In the 80s, my mom boxed up her dress. There was a whole mini scandal on TikTok like a year ago of millennial daughters opening up their mother's box dresses only to find that there was nothing in them. And when they went to have the dresses preserved, archived, however you want to say it, whoever did it just packed it with tissue paper and then sold the wedding dress, I guess, 30 years ago.
Whoa.
And this has happened to multiple women. So maybe Charlotte and Carrie are smart not to have them boxed up and just have it right there in their closet where they could see it.
So yeah, Charlotte's kind of generally emo in this episode about being engaged because she thinks that she, like, blew her load with the Trey wedding and now she can't, like, get that excited or have a big wedding.
Which is weird because starting in season 6 and it's extended through 2 seasons of And Just Like That, like, Charlotte's spirit animal is Elizabeth Taylor, and that is a woman who was happily and joyfully and had 7 large weddings. She never let the fact that she had been married before slow her down for her next wedding.
Yeah, it's like, if you're gonna do it, you might as well go all in. Although I get it, it's awkward because how long ago could the Trey wedding have been? 2 years? Less than 2 years? That's awkward. You can't have 2 weddings within a 2-year period. Like, I don't think Elizabeth Taylor was quite so brazen. There's gotta be a fucking article about this. Oh, wow. No, she's way worse than I thought, actually.
I told you.
Way worse than I thought. Okay, there was 2 years between her wedding to Conrad Hilton and her second husband, Michael Welding. But then she divorced Michael Welding and got married to another Michael Todd, in the same year, 1957.
Right. And then Michael Todd died. And so Eddie Fisher, who was a good friend of Michael Todd, went to go comfort her. They started fucking and then they got married. And what was that, a year later?
Yeah, a year later. And then she divorced him and married Richard Burton in the same year.
Wow, that woman was very busy in the 1960s.
And then, yeah, she divorced him in 1974, got back together, married him again in 75. This is truly, like, this is addiction. You know what I mean? Like, I obviously knew this, but I didn't really think that these were overlapping in the same year.
Yes, it's basically some of these marriages are like the time that it took to get divorce is the time period between marriage, divorce, next wedding.
Yeah, wow. Queen.
Yeah, and Jennifer Lopez thinks she has a love and relationship addiction. She should look at Elizabeth Taylor. Okay, back over at a different closet, Miranda's closet. She has nothing to wear, Chelsea.
Okay, this plotline doesn't make sense, but I'll get into that in a bit. She has nothing to wear. She doesn't feel like going out because she's, you know, a mom now and is covered with baby vomit and is sleep deprived and stuff. And then for some reason in this moment of all moments, she decides to see if she can fit back into her skinny jeans, which I want to clarify. When this episode came out, she wasn't talking about like a drain pipe Kate Moss jean.
She was talking about every person has a jean that they have not fit into for a certain amount of time. And evidently for Miranda, who has survived several moves since she was in college, she has kept these pair of jeans from 1985.
Her skinny jeans, which miraculously she fits into.
The styling of Miranda for the club scene is just such a Patricia Field styling touch. Like, it's not even fingerless gloves. It's like a wrist warmer.
In this period of fashion, like, the wrist cuff was a very big thing, but this is like a huge denim one with a raw edge that is studded.
It's like bedazzled with a broken mirror.
Yeah, it's very not Miranda. It's very Patricia Field, probably from her store.
This is the episode where I think we have the highest concentration of things that came from Patricia Field's boutique, because Samantha's outfit is fully...
Samantha is head to toe. And that was pretty crazy because, to my knowledge, this is the only time on Sex and the City where we actually see the House of Field branding on these patchwork pants that she's wearing. And that was wild because it's like she's repping the real life store of the costume designer of the show. And at that point, Patricia Field, the store, had become quite well known outside of New York because of Sex and the City.
It is amazing knowing how many costume decisions were shot down by Michael Patrick King because it didn't feel in the real world that he would allow this sort of multiverse breaking of the fourth wall.
Which I love. With these pants, she also has this deconstructed New York Dolls t-shirt that's been turned into some sort of bodysuit with a lace-up front. It's honestly, it's might be my favorite Samantha outfit. Certainly in the top three.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think anything can top the pink... Was it Ungaro suit?
Yeah. It's a real, like, only Patricia Field would do this kind of thing.
Right. When Miranda rocks up and explains that she's wearing jeans she hasn't worn since college, she explains that the reason she's able to fit into them is that she had a child, stopped eating, and now can fit in jeans that she hasn't worn since college, and only because she had mono. So I guess to Miranda, having a kid is basically like taking Ozempic.
It's kind of weird as she was like rail thin in the early seasons of this show.
Cynthia herself was actually pregnant, not the season that Miranda got pregnant. She was actually pregnant at the same time Sarah Jessica Parker was pregnant. So she's equally postpartum in season six.
It's not to say she's not very thin in this scene and in this episode. It's just like, she was very, very, very thin in season one and two. I don't believe when she says she hasn't been able to fit in these since 1985, because it's like, girl, did you see yourself 2 years ago?
But you know what? We love this show. We love this episode. We will buy into this.
Of course. Although I really do not subscribe to this belief about keeping one's skinny jeans.
I mean, I got rid of my skinny jeans, which are actually...
Skinny jeans
a long time ago.
Because my whole thing about that is that the amount of time that transpires between you're fitting in the skinny jeans, then slowly you gain weight so you can't fit into them, then you lose the weight so you could fit into them again, that takes years. So it's like by the time that you can fit back into them again, those jeans are out of style. You should buy different jeans. Unless your skinny jeans are like a straight leg, like boot cut 501 or something.
It is a stylistic miracle that if you can make this work, if old jeans you have, you can fit in and style has come around that they're back in fashion again.
Well, I guess that makes sense because fashion does work in like 20-year cycles. So if these are from the 80s and it's like... 2001 or whatever, 2002.
Welcome to Jean Talk with Chelsea and Lauren. Anyway, Charlotte continues to be a tad emo. She explains to her friends that she's a little bit embarrassed about her behavior from this morning because it's just her second wedding and she has decided not to have any bridesmaids, which my hot take is I think this is the nicest gift you can give your friends.
Yeah, it's nice to give them the gift of not having to wear the matching dresses. Speaking of which, I wanted to ask you, at your wedding, mm-hmm. are there other bridesmaids or am I just the maid of honor?
You're the maid of honor.
Okay, cool. I wasn't sure.
I wouldn't have anyone if you didn't request to be my maid of honor. Again, I hold Charlotte's belief that this is the nicest thing you can do to friends you actually love, which is not to have them participate in the whole song and dance of a wedding.
Yeah, but only a certain type of woman feels that way. Like, for some women, being like a maid of honor is like a part-time job that they've always dreamed of.
Who are these women? Because according to the Reddit forums I've read, not a lot of people would like to be this person.
No, I've met them before and they live for this shit. Trust me.
Okay, do they have ample income to pay for all these bridal showers and bachelorette parties and dresses?
They figure it out.
Anyway, my other opinion for someone at Charlotte's level is like she should actually just be buying them their bridesmaid dresses as well. I guess I should be buying your bridesmaid
dress. No, you absolutely don't have to buy my bridesmaid dress.
It's a business expense.
It's is that tax evasion?
Not if we do an Instagram post about it. Guys, watch out for that.
God.
So they're in the club now. Miranda gets separated because she's knocked into someone else's bed. Chelsea, when I first watched this episode, I thought this is just what life in New York was like. Like, this is how you meet men. You go to a club with a friend, you bump into someone, and then you start talking to them.
Okay, but surely you've done that at some point.
I've never been knocked into someone's bed at a bed-themed club, no. Also, this guy looks like Brady's real father. I'm sorry. Hot take.
Wait, I've already forgotten what he looks like.
He's a redheaded gentleman.
Oh, okay.
And as we know, Steve is a brunette. And as we learned in a previous episode, Miranda dyes her hair red?
She said anyone can be red with the right colorist. I think that you could look at that line either way.
Okay.
I think it's just stating that not all redheads, hashtag not all redheads, are naturally red.
So the other three ladies get to their, well, not table, they get to their bed.
Also, in talking about Miranda's skinny jeans and Samantha's incredible House of Field outfit, we completely neglected to discuss Carrie's hooded Vivian Westwood dress, which is quite good.
Carrie and Vivian Westwood, always a strong combination.
Yes.
So Carrie immediately clocks Berger's friend, who is played by writer, director, actor Michael Showalter.
Love him.
Chelsea, did you know he's the one that directed this Anne Hathaway, Harry Styles fanfic movie?
No, what's that even called? But good for him.
It's called The Idea of You, and she plays a mom who takes her daughter to Coachella and meets a Harry Styles-esque singer and starts a romance with him.
I mean, he's cool.
He's great. He does feel like someone that would be friends with Berger.
Genius casting.
Again, this goes back to our conversation of how long did Berger and Carrie date? Because it's clear that they dated long enough that she has met this guy before and long enough that because they've made eye contact, she has to go over and at least acknowledge him.
I think her anger is justified because I think that he is a dick.
To be fair, I think she should have just not gone up to him, but she does. She introduces herself. He introduces her to the friends he's with as Berger's girlfriend, and then she is forced to say, we broke up this morning.
But I think she has to go up to them. That would be incredibly awkward if she didn't.
I don't know. I think a like, hey, would have sufficed. And maybe he could have come over. But anyway, this is a comedy show. We needed this scenario to happen. He also says to her when she admits that they broke up, he goes, I knew you guys had all kinds of problems.
So I can understand why that would elicit strong reactions in Carrie and be like, fuck him, fuck his friends.
There's two things, right? This is the initial interaction they have, and she feels the need to add, he was bad in bed, and then walks away.
That's not even like a lie, because remember how their relationship started off?
Yeah, evidently we're on the side of Samantha, because she goes back to Samantha and Charlotte and is like, you know that angry message I didn't want to leave on Berger's phone? I think I just left it with his friend. And she says, I said he was bad in bed, which isn't even true. And Samantha gives her a look and Carrie goes, twice out of how many times? And I'm like, I don't know how many times. I don't know if you've dated for 6 weeks or 6 months.
Also, I think that given how cunty the whole, like, I knew you guys had all kinds of problems part is, like, I think that's a fair response because it's like, Burger's told his friend about all of their problems. So why can't she just throw one into the ring?
I think it's fine.
She should have left it at this, and that would have been perfect, actually.
Her fear is like, oh, his friends are going to go back and tell this story and tell him how I'm crazy and mad. But it's like, he broke up with you on a post-it. That's a justifiable reaction. So she has a little nerve cliquot, as Samantha calls it.
I loved that.
And goes back over to elaborate and go, actually, he was fine in bed. Great even. Which I'm like, that's quite a scale to go from bad to fine to great.
Yeah, don't give him that compliment.
She gets even more upset because Michael Showalter and his friends seem to be okay with the fact that Burger broke up with her on a post-it. As they say, there's no good way to break up with someone.
Then he's like, well, maybe he was just afraid to break up with you in person because, you know, women can get really angry and they freak out and they turn into psycho bitches or whatever he says. Again, I think that's just a mean thing to say. I think this fight is less about Burger even and more about like this guy and the shit that he's saying.
There's something about this interaction where I assume that Carrie's column this week is about how she got broke up with on a post-it, but the more interesting conversation is just the male and female perspective on the right and wrong way to break up with someone. Because even if that's their point of view that like it's hard to break up with anyone because they might be upset, Carrie's has the correct point of like any way except a post-it note is a better way to break up with someone.
Yeah, of course.
Those three gentlemen do not look like they should have been on the guest list for bed.
They do look a little bit square.
So they decide to leave the club opening. I guess bed wasn't all that they thought it was going to be.
Immediately when they get outside, Carrie's like, I need to smoke weed now.
Because a group of people smoking weed pass by. And she's like, that's exactly what my mind needs right now. Cloudiness. And Miranda, who's imbued with this new confidence, goes and asks these gentlemen for pot. I would say Cynthia Nixon's portrayal is very akin to her performance in The Gilded Age.
What, just like the enthusiasm that she suddenly has randomly?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess because she talked to that gentleman who I say looks like Brady's father, it's given her renewed confidence and suddenly she's acting like her flight attendant persona. Hey, guys, where can I get some pot?
No, I love that, though. It's so fun. And of course, Charlotte, being a goody two shoes, is like, is it safe to buy pot from strangers?
And the answer is, how else are you supposed to buy pot?
Yeah, seriously.
So the answer is they need to go to a bar. And that's where the weed hookup will be. They are at that bar that's on 7th Street and Avenue B that is in every Law & Order and New York show.
Yet I've never set foot in there.
Same. I think it is only for kind of like the diner that's right by LACMA that is actually only for film shoots.
The Bernie Sanders one?
That is now, yes, a Bernie Sanders installation.
Yeah.
So at this bar, Charlotte admits to Carrie that she wishes that she wasn't married already. In our rewatches, we always discuss how three characters are normally served a plot in these episodes and one is left shortchanged, but this is actually a rare episode where everyone has something to do, and Charlotte actually has the most complete emotional plot, from being excited about her wedding to having doubts to having her excitement renewed about getting married.
But also, she's in her feelings because she sees this, like, bachelorette party at the dive bar, and they're all so excited and blah, blah, blah.
But being excited is a state of mind. She doesn't know. This could be that woman's third marriage.
Yeah, true.
So a bride asks for Charlotte to take their photo of this bachelorette, and then Carrie, which is what all good friends have to do, is like, you know, she's getting married, and they have her get in the photo, and they all take a photo together, and guess what? She's excited about getting married again.
It's cute. Samantha is watching Smith on TRL on the TV at the bar. Some guy hits on her. She brushes him off.
She brushes him off, and then she watches Smith. He's looking quite hot with his hair pulled back and those Dior sunglasses.
Very hot.
Is, of course, asked if he's seeing anyone, and he said, well, I am dating, but no one special, which is a label that Samantha doesn't like either. She'd like to be somewhere in between girlfriend and no one special.
So she decides to just, like, randomly make out with the guy that hit on her, despite the fact that he has some terrifying New Jersey girlfriend that then screams at her.
It's funny you said New Jersey. I have in my notes three Staten Island girls attacks Samantha.
Yeah, you're right. Staten Island, for sure.
But the delivery of the second friend who goes, "I'll slap the shit out of you," always makes me laugh. So Samantha and Carrie are chased out of this bar, somehow unseen by Charlotte and Miranda.
I love the way they scream, though, and run out like little girls, because they try to hold their own with these women for a second, but then they just realize it's not going to happen.
Oh, no. There are many different New Yorks. They are the gritty high priestesses above 14th Street on the island of Manhattan, for sure.
But this is like one of those rare moments on Sex and the City where they actually have to mingle with working class people. And that's really what this scene is about.
Samantha is able to get a joint because I guess when you tip $20 to a bartender, you get a channel change and a joint.
So they finally get to smoke pot. Hallelujah. And this is a really great moment between Samantha and Carrie.
They bitch about men. Fucking men. Men are bullshit.
Why is Samantha complaining, though? Because Smith is amazing.
He is fine with calling her his girlfriend. And the publicist in her and the Samantha in her was like, "I don't think you should do that. You know us women, we're crazy bitches. Sometimes when we hear the thing we want our men to say, we don't like that either."
Yeah.
I gotta say, Sarah Jessica Parker's choice to kind of do a rapid puff for her weed technique is admirable. I've never really seen that before.
See, I can tell that you're not a seasoned weed smoker from that comment. That's what you have to do to hit a joint that's kind of about to go out, almost. Or to intensify the flame. I don't know why, but that's just how you do it.
See, that's even more interesting. So Sarah Jessica Parker is a seasoned weed smoker, at least someone in her life is, to know to do that.
Yeah, and I think you can definitely tell that from this performance. Good for her.
So Samantha takes a call from Smith Jared while Carrie's all in her high, and that is when the lights go on, the police are there, she turns around with a joint in her mouth.
And the Vivian Westwood, like, hood on her head. So funny.
This is a great smash cut of Carrie in the backseat of a police car, Miranda being a lawyer on Carrie's behalf, something that we've always talked about that we would love to see more of.
Well, we only see it when Carrie has to interact with a lawyer or a police officer, like when she got mugged or
Biggs' will got read. Yeah. I love this detail to show the end of Charlotte's interior storyline, which is Charlotte is now wearing the bridal veil from the bachelorette party.
Very cute. So Miranda's like, you know, she's an extremely law-abiding citizen. This isn't like her. And they invoke the post-it as a way to get sympathy from the cop.
Which made me realize that from the brunch scene, there was an outfit change for Carrie and she snuck that post-it into her pants.
I like to think it was just in her handbag. So the cop's like, "I don't believe that she got broken up with on a post-it." And then Carrie slams it against the glass in the back seat.
Yes, and that has provided us many meme formats, just having that post-it note up against the window. And the officer decides to write her up for public smoking, which Samantha's like, "Why can't you just let her go?" And he gets to say, "I'm sorry, I can't. Don't hate me."
So they go to a restaurant to consume a sundae of some kind because they're all stoned.
A sundae and banana split?
Very funny to see them all stoned together. Although we saw this some other time, right? When else did they have a joint?
Hot Child in the City. The end of Hot Child in the City, yeah, is Samantha, yes, and Carrie smoking weed. This also gives us the line of Carrie high out of her mind saying, "This is the official end to what will be known as the day I got arrested for smoking a doobie."
Very classic Sarah Jessica Parker delivery on that line.
But Miranda is correct. You didn't get arrested. There's a great moment where Carrie goes, "I know what I learned from my burger relationship." And then she's just so high, Chelsea.
Very funny.
Yeah, this is when the episode becomes a Cheech and Chong movie.
Well, I also like when Miranda's like, "Actually, I agree with Charlotte's whole everything happens for a reason shtick. Because if I hadn't gotten pregnant by Steve, I would have never had Brady and I would have never had no time to eat and I would have never fit into these jeans and realized that the city is full of cute men."
All of these lines about Brady in retrospect after hearing Daddy MPK refer to Brady as almost having started as an abortion is just funny to me.
We should have mentioned that Miranda's whole skinny jeans arc is the conclusion of the her trying to lose the baby weight arc that started in season 5.
The overeater who overate her.
Yes.
Well, but also Miranda ends the episode with the jeans popping because she ate too much of that sundae.
Love it.
Charlotte takes back what she said. She does want all of them to be bridesmaids. And then all the girls have a look of horror and she goes, oh, don't worry, you don't have to wear matching dresses.
And then the episode ends.
Yes, it ends with a Carrie voiceover. I might never find the lesson in why Berger and I split, but at least for the moment, there was a banana split. Oh, that's why I thought they were having a banana split.
They literally were. This is the best kind of Sex in the City episode because it's an episode where the girls just have a crazy night on the town, which is one thing that we haven't yet gotten from it just like that.
And I'm sorry, we're never going to get it, Chelsea, because that would be fun.
There's something about those episodes where they have a crazy night. You don't know where the night takes you. That is just really fun from the standpoint of the viewer. And we watch the show because of their dynamic as a group. And there's a lot of group in this episode.
That's true. And also a surprising thing about this episode is despite it being compressed, right? The majority of the episode is them on a night out. So many storylines do get served and there are very emotionally resonant plot lines in each. Miranda's disordered eating storyline notwithstanding.
But still, that's tapping into a common experience.
Very true. So how many Manolos are we going to give this episode?
This is 10 Manolo episode.
All right, 10 Manolos, baby.
Did you agree? I mean,
pun intended, it's a high point for sure.
This is an iconic episode. It's iconic for a reason. And I think that goes beyond just the post-it of it all, as we've discovered today.
It's a great episode. A great Smith-Jared episode, too. Who saw that coming?
Well, also just having TRL on this episode is so special.
The nostalgia factor. Yeah. And this is the last time we'll ever see Charlotte sort of single again, because in the following episode is her wedding to Harry.
Wow, that was fast.
Time is a flat circle on Sex and the City.
All right, guys, we did it.
Until next week.
Bye.
All right, bye.